Morning, everyone.
So, do you know the story of the wise men? I thought we might kind of do it like a mastermind. You know, pick one of you, sit them in a leather chair, shine the light, and your specialist subject is the wise men. So I'm going to ask you some questions, but I won't pick on anyone. I thought about picking on Becca, but I won't. You're just looking at me so nicely, Becca. So first question, what gifts did they bring? Good, that's correct. But that's only one mark, sorry. How many were there? We don't know. Very good. It is obviously your specialist subject. What were they? Wise men. Were they kings? No, they were wise men. Often we see them as kind of three kings with camels and that, don't we? But we're only told they're wise men. So what were these wise men? What sort of wise men? Astronomers, okay. So kind of, they had telescopes and things, right? Where did they come from? And where was the east? Sorry? Oriental. I thought somebody said offered. Oriental from the east. So east of Jerusalem and kind of which countries would they be today? East of Jordan, Iran, Iraq, going out there. Good. You're very, very good. Okay, now we'll real test you. The story of the wise men, which gospel writers tell that story? Does Matthew? Does Mark? Does Luke? Does John? So it's only Matthew. Okay. So that's where I'm going to start, because I'm going to look at this story, but I want to start by looking at the context of the story, and behind it is, why does Matthew tell this story? None of the others do. So I want to try and get at, why is Matthew telling the story? So if you look at the Christmas story, Mark's gospel has nothing. Mark starts with John the Baptist. It's probably the verbal account of Peter, and it's all about what Jesus actually did and said. If you look at John's gospel, what parts of the Christmas story is in John's gospel? None. It's just the Word became flesh. And having had that section, he goes straight into John the Baptist. So again, there's nothing of the... So the Christmas story that we have is Matthew and Luke. And if you look at Luke, and you go through it, it starts with Elizabeth, there's the story of Zechariah, there's Mary coming to Elizabeth and the Magnificat, there's the visitation of Mary by the angels, there's the birth of Jesus with the shepherds, there's then Mary taking Jesus to the temple, probably at around 40 days, and Anna and Simeon. That's the story in Luke. And it's followed by a genealogy of Jesus in Luke, which, if you look, starts with Adam and ends with Mary. And the whole of Luke is around Mary. He's talking about Mary all the time. And that's, Luke himself was a Gentile, he was probably a doctor, he probably came from Troas, and we, by tradition, Mary goes to live with John in Ephesus, near Troas, in her life. Therefore, there is a very good chance that Luke and Mary met, and that Luke's account is Mary's first-hand story of what happened. But that's not what our passage is today. Our passage is Matthew. And Matthew has none of that. What Matthew has is a genealogy of Jesus from Abraham, not from Adam, and ending with Joseph. And then it has a dream of Joseph, who now knows that Mary is expecting a child and he's betrothed to her. And the dream is, you are to take her as your wife. And she will have a son and call him Jesus. It's to Joseph. And actually, Matthew, there's no mention of Mary. And then, chapter 2, we have the story of the Magi. Okay? So that's the context. And now what we're going to do is literally go through this story bit by bit and see what it really says. And then see for ourselves what that might mean for us today. So I'm literally going to be reading verse by verse. You may want to follow it in a Bible. If you haven't got a Bible, just put your hand up and somebody at the back will bring you one if there's any left. There's none left. Okay, very good. We've dished them all out. So we're on page 734, chapter 2, verse 1. Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. So King Herod. Herod appears many times in the New Testament. How many Herods are there? Four. Oh, I think you were at the 9 o'clock service, if I remember right. There's always one. There's four Herods. This is Herod the Great. Herod the Great, he was king of the Jews, but he was not a Jew. He probably came from Jordan, from Edom. He was appointed king of the Jews by the Romans, by the Caesar. So he's very much kind of, you know, not one of them, but he's made like the kind of puppet king. He was done that around 30 BC, when he was about 30, 35. He has a very checkered history. And at this time, he's been reigning for about 30 years or so. Right? And he's nearly 70, this King Herod. This is the same Herod in the next chapter, or even this chapter, kills all the babies. The second Herod is one of his sons, and that's the Herod with Pontius Pilate at the crucifixion. And then there's a grandson of Herod the Great is in Acts, and a great-grandson is in Acts, without going into too many details. So there's four Herods. This is the Herod the Great. About that time, some wise men. So the word that's used in the original is magi, from which we get magic, magician. If you go into historical documents and look for this word magi, you find that they came into existence around 600 years before Jesus. And they come from the area of Iran, Iraq. That's where they were. And they were a priestly tribe. So the religion of that part of the world was Zoroastrianism. And these were the priests of that religion. They were very well respected. They followed the stars, a kind of mixture of astronomy, looking at the stars, and then the interpretation, astrology. A key point for them, for the Magi, was they, it's almost, I tried to say it like this, but when we in this country have our king and then the queen and so on and so on, and they're taken to church, you know, and they are crowned, the coronation, who does that? Yeah, the head of the kind of church does it. That's what the Magi were. They were the king makers, right, of that part of the world. So that's the wise men. They come from eastern lands. So the eastern lands are east of what would then be the edge of the Roman Empire, because the Jews were under Roman occupation. And there was another empire that fought with the Roman Empire. That was the Parthian Empire. That started about 200 BC and went to 200 AD, so it lasted 400 years. It was made up of Iran and Iraq, and that's where these people were coming from. We don't know if they were Jews or Gentiles. They were probably Gentiles, but you do have to remember that in the Jewish history, the Jewish people were taken to Babylon, which then became part of this Parthian Empire, and not all the Jews came back. And certainly there was a Jewish diaspora or people living in that part of the world. And it's conceivable that these magi were Jews, but it's more likely that they were actually Gentiles. So they came from the eastern lands, they arrived in Jerusalem asking, where is the newborn king of the Jews? So first of all, they come to Jerusalem. Why? Because Jerusalem is where the king of the Jews is. Who's the king of the Jews? Herod the Great. So they come to Herod the Great saying, where's the new born king of the Jews? In a sense, where's your baby? Right? We saw his star and we've come to worship him. Imagine Herod. First of all, he's already got three sons who are all in their 30s. He's expecting when he dies, and remember he's nearly 70, he's going to hand over to them. And now suddenly here are these very well-respected people coming, and it's probably a significant contingent of people coming to say, where's the newborn king of the Jews? We've seen the stars, and this would be recognized by him. This would be important to him. It's linked to a prophecy in Daniel 9:25. Daniel, if you remember, was in Babylon, and in Babylon he's given a vision of when the Messiah will come, with a given number of years. If you look it up, it's, I think, 63 times 7 and 7 times 7 and so on. And it's basically coming down to about 500 years. And so they would know those prophecies from Daniel, from Babylon, and they would be looking at those prophecies, looking at the stars, and now saying, now's the time, the newborn Messiah is coming. So this is kind of important to Herod. And of course it worries him. It says he's disturbed because it's threatening his whole reign and his kingdom and so on. So Herod was deeply disturbed. That's verse 3. He called a meeting of the priests and the teachers of the religious law. Remember, he's not a Jew himself, so he gets the Jewish scribes in. He says, where is the Messiah supposed to be born? His mind is not about a Messiah. But suddenly these people have come, and now he's got to find out everything he can about this Messiah. In Bethlehem in Judea, they said. Bethlehem, first of all, this is a fulfillment of the prophecy. So you have the prophecy in verse 6 and 7. That comes from Micah. And Micah had made this prophecy 700 years before Jesus. And it was Bethlehem because that was David's hometown. And remember, the Messiah is to be in the line of David. So it's coming back to David's hometown. So he says it's in Bethlehem. Then Herod called for a private meeting. So he's now doing everything in secret because he's now going to manipulate and try and change things with the wise men. He learned from them the time when the star first appeared. I'll come back to that in a minute. But he wants to know, when did you see this star? Then he told them, go to Bethlehem. How far is Bethlehem from Jerusalem? Here to Swavesey, about 7 miles. Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too. Notice he doesn't go. He's king. After this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star that they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. There's lots of theories around the star. What might it have been? Was it a shooting star? Was it a supernova? Was it kind of planets coming into constellation with each other? We don't know. There's many theories about it, but we just don't know what it was. The star of the scene guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them, and they stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. And I want to stop at that point. This is now the end of their journey. We don't know exactly where they came from, but the chances are they came from somewhere like Babylon. And Babylon would be on the west side of this Eastern Empire. If they came from Babylon to Jerusalem, do you know how far that is? It's 1,700 miles. There's no little chefs or motorways or whatever. We don't know if they had camels or not. They probably did. But, you know, a kind of travelling thing would be maybe 10 days, 10 miles a day. 20 if they're pushing it. You know, this is over sand and everything and finding their way, stopping, eating, finding water. This is a journey of probably 6 months that it's taken them to do this. And now they're at the end and they're overjoyed. It's no little thing. It wasn't that they started last week and now they're here, having caught a number 10 bus. Right? It's a significant journey that they've made. So it went ahead of them, stopped at the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled and overjoyed. That's verse 10. They entered the house. In the Greek, the word house here is not stable. This is now a residential house. This is different from the shepherds coming to the stable and the manger. And saw the child. And the word for child in Greek is not a baby. They use a different word than was used with the shepherds. The word child is an infant. So kind of putting all this together, you know, when they see the star, that's when the Messiah is born. They have probably travelled something of the order 3 to 6 months or more. They come to Herod, and he passes them on to Bethlehem. And after all this, what does Herod do? He kills all the children under the age of 2. And remember, he asked them, at what time did you see the star? So I always thought, I don't know about you, I always thought, you know, the shepherds arrive that evening and next day the wise men come. It's not like that. It's quite a time later, almost certainly. They are visiting an infant, and now Mary and Joseph are probably living in Bethlehem. And from there, they then escape to Egypt to avoid the killing of the innocents. They entered the house, saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasure chests. Not little boxes, right? These are treasure chests. So again, you can imagine this journey that they've had. You know, 1,500, 1,700 miles, carrying chests with gold in, so the danger of robbers and everything. This is a major undertaking that they've made. And that's kind of one of the... We're going to come back to what Matthew's trying to say here. But maybe we have the wrong image of what this was. This is a long journey of priestly respected people to come and acknowledge the Messiah is born. Right, it's major. And that's the way it would have come across at that time. We miss the significance of it. Right, that's what Matthew's trying to get over. Matthew is talking to Jews. Luke was talking to Gentiles. Matthew is talking to Jews. That's why he emphasizes Joseph. He's using the scriptures. He's constantly referring back to the scriptures because he wants to convince the Jews that Jesus is the Messiah. And he tells the story of the Magi, the wise men coming, the kingmakers who come and go to Herod and bypass Herod because he is an artificial king made by the Romans. And instead, they come to the real king of the Jews, the Messiah. And when they come, they bring gifts of gold. Gold was recognition that he's a king. You bring a gift of gold to a king. And they bring a gift of frankincense. Frankincense is a resin from a tree, and it was used in prayer, and it's a sweet fragrance. It's where we get the word incense from. But it's the substance of a priest. It's praise and prayer. So they bring gold for the king. They bring frankincense for the priestly role of Jesus. And they bring myrrh. Mary's is mentioned two other times in the Gospels. When Jesus is on the cross, they take a stick dipped in wine and myrrh and hold it to him. Remember? And also when you have the spices, he's being buried, and they wrap Jesus' body, it's wrapped in spices and myrrh. So the myrrh is a sign of death, of his burial. So the king makers, the magi, are coming to announce the Messiah is born. The king of the Jews is born. He will be a king. He will be a priest. But there's something that you're not expecting. He's going to have to die and be a sacrifice as well as the priest. That's the added myrrh. That's what was not expected. It's what's not in Isaiah. The verses in Isaiah in chapter 60 have gold and frankincense, but they don't have the myrrh. The realization that the Messiah has to die for the people and be his sacrifice. So that's the content. That's actually what's there. So now the consequence for us. What does this mean for us today? And I want to basically just say two things. One is Matthew's message was to get over that Jesus is King of the Jews. Jesus will come again as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And one of our daily responsibilities is to enthrone him as king in our lives. So a challenge for us each day is seeing Jesus as our king. When I was a student, there was a religious tract that kind of went around, and it had a circle, and it said, "This is your life." I don't know if others may have seen it. "This is your life." And then in the circle, it had the picture of a throne. And the thing was, who's on the throne of your life? Are you on the throne, or is Jesus on the throne of your life? So the first consequence for us, the Magi left their comfort. They travelled more than 1,000 miles through dangerous territory to make Jesus king. A long spiritual journey. And we have the spiritual journey of making Jesus king of our lives. I think over Christmas we had the, what was the kind of slogan for Christmas? How far have you come? Have you come far? Right? And the wise men came far. Gentiles coming far. Well-respected people coming far to say Jesus is king. Herod wasn't willing to go 7 miles. He stayed at home. So what are we going to do? Are we going to be a Herod and stay at home and not enthrone him? Or are we going to enthrone him King of Kings and Lord of Lords? And the second, the gifts that they bring. They bring gold, frankincense and myrrh. So gold is the possessions, it's the materialism. If we enthrone him, are we going to bring him our gold? Are we going to bring him our possessions, you know, our money and our things, and actually say, whatever I've got, it's for you? By that, I don't mean go and give everything away. I'm saying, what's our attitude to the gold in our lives? Will we bring in frankincense? Will we bring him our praise and our prayer? And lastly, myrrh is death. Will we die to ourselves? Will we bring him our lives? Which is what he's asking for. Amen.